News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Taoiseach Simon Harris has insisted over the weekend that Ireland's position in recognising Palestinian statehood will come into effect by the end of the month, which follows on from Taoiseach Micheál Martin also saying that on News Talk Breakfast last week. So this appears to be government policy. But what does this say to the world? For more on this, I'm joined now by Daniel Epstein O'Dowd, spokesperson for the Ireland-Israel Alliance. Good morning to you, Daniel. This recognition of the Palestinian state by Ireland, is this something that you would welcome?
No, quite frankly, because I think it's little more than lip service in reality. There's no definition as to what the borders of this Palestinian state would be. Who will govern it? Who's the Irish government recognised as the governing authority of this state that they've recognised? And ultimately, I think there's no practical impact to this on the ground in the Middle East.
All right. Let me put some, counter positions to you. Whether or not you approve or I approve or anyone else approves of those who govern the state of Palestine doesn't necessarily make the state of Palestine become some kind of a state that we don't recognise. Many people do not approve of Netanyahu's government in Israel. They may be democratically elected, I would accept that, but they don't approve necessarily of them. That doesn't mean that Israel doesn't exist. Or indeed, Vladimir Putin would have, questioned the legitimacy of the Zelensky government in Ukraine, and no one takes that very seriously. So governments don't necessarily affect the sovereignty of a state.
So I completely accept the validity of that point. Now, what I would say in response to that is that one of the key criteria for statehood is defined borders. And at the moment, that is still not determined. So that would negate that recognition, because where are you recognising? Are you recognising it in Gaza, in East Jerusalem, in the West Bank? It's an anomalous territory which can only be determined.
And I would accept that there is dispute over those borders between Palestine and Israel. But many people would regard a two-state solution as the only viable option for peace in that area of the Middle East. And I think most people, despite perhaps the dispute around Jerusalem and the territories within that small section, would accept that the West Bank and Gaza are the two areas defined by, more or less, by a border that make up the state of Palestine. Are you saying because Israel hasn't agreed to the exact outline of those borders that therefore Palestine can't exist?
No, I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that, there are territorial claims on both sides that would need to be resolved through peace negotiations. And I think ultimately within that it is about practical measures for peace within this. And, at the end of the day, this spiritual declaration of a Palestinian state that we mentioned is in the West Bank and Gaza. But, going back to the governing question, the West Bank is under the rule of the Palestinian Authority. Gaza is under Hamas. So you could have a situation where the Irish government recognises the government in the West Bank, but also that in name applies to Gaza, which is run by a terrorist group. So it brings all these practical questions in. And one of the key lessons and kind of principles of the peace accords in the 90s and early noughties was that a Palestinian state would have to be unilaterally negotiated with Israel, but also with key regional partners, because it does impact Egypt, it does impact Jordan, and it does impact a number of regional partners. So things like connecting those two territories, how do you connect Gaza with the West Bank? They are unique in the sense of how strong.
Yeah, that there is Israel in between the two, Israeli territory in between the two, and I accept that. If I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is you would feel that this is putting a cart before a horse. Is that what you're saying? Or are you saying that you don't respect that the Palestinian state should exist at all? Are you saying, which of those things are you saying?
I'm certainly saying that this is cart before the horse territory. I think Palestinian self-determination and liberation from Hamas, should be an aspiration of everybody in democratic societies who holds true to those principles. But ultimately, this is a move that it is rooted in lip service. It's not going to practically improve things on the ground.
Okay.
And I think that's fundamentally where we leave.
Daniel, a lot of people would say when they hear you say that and say that, you know, you want to see the Palestinians liberated from Hamas, they would say, well, that's not their major problem at the moment. What they would say is that if Israel would stop bombing them and if Israel would stop their ground offensive in Rafah and stop cutting off aid, that would be the main priority for the Palestinians rather than the removal of Hamas. What do you say to that?
Well, I would fundamentally say that's a very short-term view. You know, you have to look at the status of the Palestinian people within Gaza since 2005. They've been brutally suppressed by a terrorist group who have monopolized aid coming in, independent of this conflict, have monopolized aid coming in for years, have used their own people's human shields as kind of fodder. And ultimately, you know, that if you talk about where this has come from, you know, on October 6th, there was a relative peace a bit of stability between Israel and, you know, the Palestinian territories, and Hamas launched a huge terrorist attack.
No, and I accept,
provoking that.
I think all right-minded people believe that what happened on October 7th was wrong and was unjustifiable and was unacceptable. I do. But a lot has happened since then. And many people would believe that Israel's reaction to October 7th has been disproportionate. If you look at the number of people who were taken hostage and who were killed on October 7th, and if you look at the number of Palestinians who have been killed since then, the numbers are grossly dissimilar. Can I ask you, though, because I'm genuinely very interested, the Jewish community here in Ireland, how are they feeling currently, Daniel, about all of this? I mean, Israel has said that they believe Ireland is a hostile territory to Israel.
So I think, you know, speaking with the Jewish community, within people in our community, there is a huge level of fear at the moment. You know, I think there's, I think first and foremost, they feel that they've not been recognized, or, you know, in that sense, by their own government. There's been a failure by their own government to condemn anti-Semitism. There's been plenty of it awash in the political sphere since October 7th. And I think you've kind of seen that play out in very practical terms in the Irish sense. There's increased security in synagogues. There's you know, Jewish people who are avoiding Dublin, their hometowns, due to some of the Palestinian protests that have taken place. There's a lot of self-censoring of their identity, be it speaking Hebrew, be it, you know, wearing a kippah, all of these actions because of that fear of how this will backlash in that sense. So I think there's a real sense of fear over, you know, how the rhetoric within this has become quite heated. It has moved away from peace. It's become very, very tribal. There's a lot of very polarizing rhetoric, and that does have a consequence for people's safety and security.
Okay, so maybe last question for you. Do you think that should the Irish government, and they're saying that this is what they're going to do, should they recognise the state of Palestine, that will improve Ireland-Israeli, relations, that it will disimprove them, and how will it be perceived by the Irish Jewish community living here?
Perfect. So I think, look, it again will further disimprove Ireland-Israel relations. Now, what I would say as well, they're already at an all-time low. Since October 7th, there's been a number of government actions which have, you know, served to worsen that relationship. So, you know, probably the detrimental impact of this is less than it was a few months ago.
Okay.
But it's still less than things.
I said that was the last question, but I'd like to ask you one last question. Do you see at all, I mean, you're Irish, Daniel, do you see at all the affinity that Irish people have for the Palestinian people? I think many of the reasons why Irish people are as pro-Palestinian as they are, and they are largely, we are largely as a country pro-Palestinian, because we feel that it chimes with our own history. Do you see that affinity? Do you understand that affinity?
To an extent, perhaps. But what I would also say is that there was a longstanding kind of affinity of the Irish people with the Jewish community and with the Israeli kind of aspiration for freedom, certainly a lot of the early Republican leaders. And I think fundamentally what we need to say is that the Irish people are trying to support peace in this area. Now, you know, there are different sides to all of that. There's, you know, different sympathies and everything. But fundamentally, that's where the aspiration of the Irish people is.
Look, thank you very much for joining us on all of that this morning. That is Daniel Epstein O'Dowd, spokesperson for the Ireland-Israel Alliance. Love to know what you think about all of that this morning. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7 on News Talk.